Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and we welcome you to the show. I want to thank Michelle Pichet for filling in for me and giving me a couple weeks off with my family during the 4th of July and not having to worry about trying to find internet connection and all that. Thank you so much for filling in. It's good to be back. We're here at Heartland, and we're in our 10-day Food Fund Forgiveness. Today is Monday, July the 13th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200. 4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Thank you, sweetheart. Warm day here in the Ozarks. Awesome. Beautiful day. Getting lots accomplished. Things are rocking forward for the summer season. It's shortened. We're on it, and things are moving. Michael, if you want to check our Facebook site, why is this happening? Or, no, it would be JM_Rice. Just posted some pictures. Found some neat effects on my telephone, so take a look and hold a space for us as we move forward with Heartland this summer. We've just arrived a couple of weeks ago, and we're on go. All things getting handled. Michael's out there with a chainsaw, and Ari's over there with Gail doing food. And so those are just moving forward. And the moving forward, we started last night with the workshop, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, for the group that's here for Food, Fun, Forgiveness, and Work. And really tapping in and getting some refined understanding of the driving force behind what the world calls reality. And when you recognize that thing that drives the whole perceptual system, the human perceptual system, is our goals, then the goals become the key to accessing things in that perceptual system that don't serve us. What kind of things would you suppose don't serve us?
Well, if you hold a newborn child, you get an experience of a human life. If something unlike that presence of love enters into your perceptual system, then the way to remove those things that don't belong in the perceptual system is through forgiveness. And forgiveness, being the opposite of what this culture teaches, has got nothing to do with I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, but rather is the way that I change what's happening inside of me. A couple of days ago, we had a conversation about the responsibility communication tool. And looking at the responsibility communication tool, recognizing that the output of the mind is, for each individual, always unique and individual based upon the content in that given mind. And if the content of the mind contains hostility or fear, And we load a driver, pardon me, a goal that keys into our hostility or fear, then what will happen is we'll tend to have a perceptual experience of hostility or fear being part of the outside world. And we'll language in a totally non-responsible way, we call it projection communication, that you made me mad, you made me sad, you made me afraid. And few people ever discover that when they're speaking about what they think is an experience in the world, what they're really speaking about is the output of their own minds. You know, we've quoted, a fairly authoritative source, although we've been teaching this for 40 years, recently came across a quote from the CIA website that very succinctly says what we've been teaching for the last 40 years. And this is based on research in the arena of intelligence. And in the intelligence gathering services of the CIA, they've done huge amounts of experimentation and research on perception, on reality. And what they very succinctly say is that the human mind does not record reality, it constructs it. So we are always constructing realities, output of the mind, based on the content resonated in us by an experience. So is the experience involved in our pain? Yes. The experience is the trigger for the pain, but an experience outside of you, short of somebody coming and punching you in the nose, cancel the thought, the experience outside of you can't cause pain inside of you. It can certainly trigger pain inside of you if there's pain there. And if we live in denial, that is, we use projection communication, we speak about how you made me mad, then we dissociate from the very content that causes our pain and has us believing that the problem's outside of us. What first century Aramaic forgiveness does is it gives you the opportunity to collapse into the root of pain, and then we've got the option of removing it. The responsibility communication tool is designed to do that from a different direction than the forgiveness tool. If you'd like to access the instruction sheet for the responsibility communication tool, you can go to our website, www.whyagain.org. In the middle of the page, you may have to scroll down a little bit, but in the middle of the page, you'll see a bullseye. If you click on that bullseye will open a series of links for different worksheets. And just do a search or look down the list and find the responsibility communication tool. And there's 7 steps in that tool. The first step in responsibility communication is that of recognizing that what drives our behavior is our goals. And if you don't have a goal to communicate responsibly, you're probably not going to do it. Most people say that if I'm using words, I'm communicating, but the truth is most people don't use words to communicate. They use words to win, to manipulate, to get what they want. The last thing they think about doing is using words to actually communicate. And our definition of communication in this work is that I have a construct. I have a reality in my mind that I realize belongs to me. And what I'd like to do is transfer that reality intact to you so that you understand what the reality is in my mind. If we could get people to use words for that purpose, we would have such a different society. Family systems, legal systems, military systems would be so hugely different. And so just the simple act of setting a goal to communicate. I have a reality in my mind that I'd like to transfer intact into your mind is the first step in responsibility communication. So it's making a commitment to communicate. Once you've made a commitment to communicate, then, and usually you'll use this tool where there's some sort of conflict going on. And so the second part of step number one is to create an invitation. And the invitation goes something like, I have an issue in me that I'd like your support in dealing with. So once you've committed to communication, then you share with someone that you have an issue you'd like to communicate about. And in some cases, the person you're communicating with is going to just shut you right down on the dime. Not interested. I have no interest whatsoever in doing this. And there are going to be cases where that's going to happen. And if it does, just recognize that, okay, this is not the place for the responsibility communication tool, so I'll let that go. And allow yourself to utilize one of the other tools. And of course, we've got many different tools. But assuming that there's some goodwill left in the person you're communicating with, then the response would probably be a yes. So that's the first step. I make a commitment to communicate. I create an invitation. Now, the second step, I want to take responsibility for making sure that we're both talking about the same event. How many have ever had a discussion with somebody about something, maybe an argument about something, or an outright fight about something, and later found out that you were both talking about a totally different scenario? You know, I'm talking about what happened last week, and you're talking about what happened 6 months ago. So in step two, you take responsibility for making sure that everybody's talking about the same event, and you do that by describing the mechanical facts of the event. Not your reality, not your perception of it, but if somebody walked in the room and dropped a cup, then the description would be about the mechanical facts of a cup was dropped. Now, if you added to it your perception of the person dropping the cup might look like, why, you stupid fool, look at the dumb thing you did, you dropped the cup. That would not be part of responsibility communication. This step is simply for describing the mechanical facts. What can a camera, a single frame of a camera, take a picture of? What can a tape recorder record? That's the idea of this step. So the mechanical facts, first of all, I want to make sure that when I'm doing responsibility communication, I include myself in the mechanical facts. So often people will tell somebody they want to do responsibility communication, and then the rest of their words are all about the other person, which of course means they're not interested in responsibility communication at all. What they're interested in is making sure that somebody else takes the blame for what's going on. So in that scenario, it might be, well, you know, I was sitting at the table having a cup of tea, and I noticed you walked in the room and you dropped a cup. That would be the mechanical facts of that circumstance. So that's step two, just the mechanical facts. You know, kind of Sergeant Friday, if you remember that, what was the name of his television show? Sergeant Friday. Anyways, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And so we're looking at this point for just the facts. And then you have a perception. You know, maybe your perception was it was really dumb to drop that cup. But what we're going to invite people to do as they utilize the third step in responsibility communication is to be responsible for their perception. And so in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to state my issue. For instance, maybe I feel frustration at what I perceive as the dumb act of dropping the cup. And so in step three, I want to bring forward what my issue is. And so that might look like, well, you know, I was sitting in the room drinking tea, you walked in and you dropped the cup, they're the mechanical facts. And in my mind, I thought, wow, that's really dumb. And now the person who dropped the cup might come back with some defensiveness. And at this point, you might point out that, well, I'm not saying you were dumb. I'm just talking about my perception. And what I realize is that when that came up in me, I felt really frustrated. So what I'm interested in doing is dealing with my frustration. So In step three, you identify what your issue is in the responsibility communication process, and you communicate in a way that makes it clear to yourself and everyone else that the issue you're communicating about is your own. So that's step three. So in step two, you've identified the mechanical facts. In step three, you're identifying your own unique individual perceptual reality and the issue that you hold around the situation. And then moving on, rather briefly, to step four, being aware that the issue that you have is what you want to clean up, you ask for support. And so the support might look like, so now that I've identified my issue, do you have any ideas about how you might support me in healing that? And the request in the responsibility communication is always about requesting support for healing, as opposed to requesting support for you to change. The person who lives in the world of projection always wants everybody else to change so they can feel better, so they can pretend that their feelings are caused by someone else. Your feelings have never been and never will be caused by someone else. Your feelings are caused by the fact that you have those energetic dynamics in you. And so in step four, I'm asking for support in healing the energetic dynamic in me that is disturbing. Then step five can be a very difficult step, because you may have to make the presumption that the person you're talking to perhaps has some intelligence and might have some good input for you. So in step five, it's honoring the person that you're with and asking for support. Do you have any ideas? And so in step five, you're actually going to, although you're sure you already know what's going to take care of it, because and you're always in error when you do that, because the perceptual output of your mind is an internal process for you, and you think something outside of you is going to change it. So there's always an error in that. And so in this step, you actually ask, letting go of all the solutions you think would take care of it, owning your issue, and asking for support and healing. Do you have any ideas? Would be step five. And then the difficult part is to shut up and listen. You actually receive this other person's input. So this other person might offer, well, let's do a worksheet. And so I sit down and, okay, let's do a worksheet, walk through the worksheet, and maybe I touch into a time where, you know, why am I so hung up on somebody doing something that I perceive as dumb? Well, I may go back to being 4 years of age and not having the manual dexterity to handle something, and it was something important to an adult around me. I dropped and I broke it and was berated for it. And so touching into something like that, I realize that there's where the real issue comes from. There's where the whole judgment about being dumb, the frustration and the anger come from. And so I might step the next level into doing a worksheet around that 3-year-old's issue that surfaced. And or I may have some suggestions about what would be helpful. So step six is, well, thank you for that support with the worksheet. And what I think might be helpful would be, you know, we went to that Mind Shifters at Still Point Breathing workshop last week, and I've got a lot of energy up for me right now. Would you mind breathing me? So you might bring another tool into play that you ask for support with. And then the final step in the process, step seven, is actually the step that most people want to start and end with. They don't want to do any of the in-between stuff, because to do the in-between stuff means you have to look inside yourself and deal with what's in there. But in step seven, if problem solving is necessary, then you would go into problem solving. And most people you'll notice start with, well, you know, when this happened, you did this and you did this, and that's what's wrong with you, and here, you just fix this. In other words, if you just problem solve, then whatever you've done that triggers what I don't want to look at, I'll be able to pretend isn't there and I don't need to deal with it. So there are issues where, you know, you're not going to be done in one worksheet or 1 week or 1 month with a particular issue. It might be bigger than that. And so step seven might include problem solving. And so, you know, and the problem solving might look like, well, if you ever see that look come up in my eyes, like I'm going to see, I see you as really dumb, that might be a place to just, you know, give me a signal that I'm in that space and I might want to look twice at what I'm doing. So the last step in the process of responsibility communication is that of really, truly leaving the problem solving till the end, and then if problem solving is necessary, to step into it. So in essence, that's the core of the responsibility communication process. There's a full 2-hour DVD and actually a 4-hour CD on the process that's available on our website. The 4-hour CD, actually, when I originally was doing the communication, did you hear what I think I said workshop? That was part and parcel of the workshop, The Circle of Life. So if you happen to order the CD, it's a 4-hour CD set of communication, did you hear what I think I said? That workshop also includes the Circle of Life workshop. They were one workshop, and it was shortly after that that the I broke them apart and put them into two different workshops. So you actually kind of get two for one in that communication, did you hear what I think I said, CD set. And then there's a 2-hour DVD of the communication tool. And so that's the lowdown. That's the long and short. And as I say, you can go to the website and click on the bullseye and just look down the list and you'll find a copy of the sheet that gives you the steps that I just went through. And so I'll just open the lines to anybody who might have any questions about that process. Does it make sense? Any questions? Any way we can support you with the responsibility communication process? So Jeannie, do we have anybody in the chat room with a hand up or anybody in the phone queue? Or pardon me, anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a question for us?
We don't have any hands up. Dr. Tim is with us, and the chat room is just guests, so they can't talk. Guests, all you have to do is to sign in to Blog Talk and give them a little bit of information, and then you're allowed to write in the chat room. Otherwise, you can just listen, but we're glad you're listening.
Yay. So, Dr. Tim, how do you be, young man?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. Enjoying the review of the responsibility communication tool. It stimulated the thought in me. I had one of the tools I've used for years, a friend of mine taught me about termination, ending relationships and reviewing them, and she taught me years ago. And every time I would present it, I would try and get people to understand that I'm doing that work for me. So I can do that for somebody who's dead and gone. I can do that for somebody who's in my presence and doesn't want to deal with the issues that the relationship might be changing or ending. But the tool is for me. And it's for me to heal. It's for me to integrate things. It's for me to get clear in my mind what thoughts I have, what energies I have, what emotions I might need to release. And that's the same kind of qualifier that I find myself most urging to give people when I talk about the responsibility communication tool. A lot of times when I present this, people leave all excited. This is great. Now I know how to tell that person off, and I know how to do it in a spiritual way. And I just try to reinforce the idea that this isn't for the other person. When I do a responsibility communication, it's for me, primarily, first and foremost for me. And as you said, if the person doesn't want to hear it, then I move on. But if they do, and if it's the kind of relationship where there's that connectedness and intimacy, as Michelle was pointing out on Friday, it can open a space for even greater intimacy and healing. That's a big if, and the tool can still be a huge benefit to me, even if the other person's already gone out of my life or doesn't want to hear about it. if I use a responsibility communication tool, it really puts me into the space of being responsible for what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling and what I'm perceiving. And I have found using the tool has had very, at different times, very much the same impact as a powerful worksheet process, where after I'm done with the responsibility communication and laying it out, when I take a breath and look at the situation again, it doesn't even look like the same situation. Even if the other person hasn't been there to support me or offer me feedback, just from my taking full responsibility, breathing into it and taking the time to write out the steps of the responsibility communication, it transforms my perception. So that's my offering.
Cool. Yeah, definitely it's a climb inside one's own mind and start to look at a different level and take responsibility for realities. And then as you move out from there, it certainly opens in most relationships a really powerful space. We've got one young lady in up near Springfield who had a product that she ordered from Sears, and it was delivered, and when they were taking it off the truck, they damaged it. The truck wasn't the right configuration for this big mower that she ordered. And so they took it back and they brought another one in the same truck and damaged it in the same way. And the third time around, she ended up writing a letter using the responsibility communication tool to the complaint manager at the Sears store in Springfield. And after all was said and done and they took care of the problem, you know, there was some problem solving. The mower had to be delivered and, you know, and properly and in good shape. But she got a letter from the manager of the department store saying that she had changed his life in the way that she communicated. And so it can have both profound internal impact and profound impact on relationships and what goes on in our external world, because the minute that we model, you know, I think one of the powerful things about it is that when we model being responsible for what's going on inside of us, we open a space for people who perhaps have never conceived of such a thing as even being possible. And as that happens, it just changes the dynamics in every direction. We did a codependence communication practicum last year. And each time that we tapped into the communication process and something was up for somebody, and we're probably going to do some of that in the Laws of Living class that we're going to start on the 24th. And what we found was that the space that opened between people was very profound, very powerful, and people who were observing the process live just had huge leaps and bounds in growth in being able to see the dynamics of the difference between projection communication and responsibility communication. So it's a pretty awesome tool, pretty sweet results come out of it. So anything else on your end, Dr. Tim? Anything to report in practice today that you're observing?
No, it's pretty much the standard fare. I have, someone earlier this morning was very, very stuck, and I suppose this would be a cautionary tale, that even knowing the tools, even being able to recite them and teach them to somebody else, if I'm not willing to use them in my own life when I get triggered, they're not worth very much to me. And, you know, it's the power of the tool. It can be the most expensive, the most advanced, the most incredibly useful tool, but if it sits in a corner in my garage collecting dust, it doesn't do any good in my life. So,
precisely.
And the other thing about it is, it doesn't matter how many times I point out to somebody, hey, you've got this fabulous tool in your garage that could solve this problem for you. If they're not willing to go pick it up and use it, eventually, if I keep telling them and insisting that they go do it, they end up feeling irritated, and they'll create a picture in their mind that I'm the one irritating them. And I'm just going to end up feeling, stirring up my own frustration if I keep trying to insist that they change something that they don't want to change. So part of my work is to, you know, just allow people to be who they are and hold the space of love for myself and for them and be willing to accept the fact that I can't do somebody else's work for them. So that would be
That's for sure.
work today.
I like to add a little addendum to the old saying that says you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But by modeling the use of the tools, you can make them thirsty. You can open the space for people to be able to really see it is possible for changes to occur. And that just opens a whole other possibility with folks. So, you know, modeling the use of the tools is one of the most powerful ways to open that space for sure. Jeannie, do you have any thoughts on responsibility communication or the discussion so far?
Well, I know that a lot of times it's very beneficial to have someone there who understands the tools to hold the space and help you through it. I know that's what we do during the communication codependence workshop, is that you're usually the moderator, and that way you can help keep people on track. So sometimes that's a helpful thing, too, is to have someone there when you're doing that. And we do have two hands up.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
Okay, the first one I think is from across the street here. It's 417 area code. Is this Jim and Erica?
This is Jim and Erica.
Well, hey there.
And they're doing publicity stuff for us.
Good afternoon. So, a couple of points. Number one, Michael, when you talk about laws of living, I can attest to the fact that it definitely improves the ability to communicate. The other thing that it does, and Michael, you mentioned it in a class last night, is that it really increases your intuitive powers. And I've experienced that personally, so I just wanted to add that. So anybody out there that would like to have their intuition cranked up to a higher level, the Laws of Living course is for you. And the other thing I wanted to talk about is this generous universe that we live in. We were experiencing a problem with an internet connection this morning. And before I tell you how that turned out to be metaphorical, let me just pose the question. Have you ever been in a conversation with somebody about a topic that you've had that conversation, that you've discussed in the past, with peace and tranquility and never had a problem? There was never any issue that came up for either one of you about, oh, politics or whatever it happened to be. And then one day you're having a similar conversation, or at least you think it's similar, and all of a sudden there's upset in the conversation. And it's hard to understand why, because, you know, you've been in this arena before, and it was never upset before. Why is there upset now? Well, now I'm going to go to the metaphor. What turned out to be the problem for our internet connection was there's a transmitter attached to the side of a building that there needs to be a clear line of sight from that transmitter to the receiver that's in the window of my room that's plugged into my computer. And outside influences can change the scenario in which we're having communication with somebody. We discussed politics with them a month ago, but something intervened in the meantime. They picked up additional data between the last conversation and this one, and now there's upset. And the metaphor is that I had a fine signal all throughout the winter. There were branches in front of that sending unit, but then spring came and leaves bloomed, and now those branches were blocking the signal. I was getting an intermittent signal, and it probably had to do with the way the wind was blowing the leaves. But I just thought that was an interesting metaphor for conditions change. There are things that are outside influences that we allow ourselves to store in our unconscious, that carbon-based memory that Michael refers to. And so what seemed like an innocuous conversation a month ago can no longer be innocuous because there is an outside influence that impacted one or the other. And that's all I wanted to say. I just thought it was an interesting metaphor from nature.
Yeah, cool point. So then, Jim, do I understand that the connection problem's resolved then? You're back on line all right?
Loud and clear so far.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Thank you, Michael Coughlin. Michael was kind enough to dig out the chainsaw and actually just posted some pictures on the Facebook page. Found a new feature on my phone that turns pictures into drawings, so they're kind of cool. So you'll see both a picture and a drawing of Michael and his chainsaw getup and gear, and of Erica and Jim as they're sitting at the computers, and then of Ari and Gail as they're in the kitchen. So we've got both pictures and these kind of cool artsy-looking sketches that the camera, you know, the phone just turns into sketches. It's pretty cool, pretty neat. But thank you, James. Good thought, and thank goodness the problem is solved. The challenge is taken care of. And, you know, there's another level of metaphor in the whole process with that too, Jim. It's a good point. And another whole level of it, and that is that in order for us to receive the signals that we need to be aligned. And when we're out of alignment, then it's hard to capture or receive those energies that we're designed to receive. And it's interesting, in the ancient Aramaic, we hear a particular man who's able to do some pretty awesome things being asked a question, and the original meaning of the words involved in the question and the instructions given have been totally and completely destroyed. And so we hear this question asked by a group of disciples, those following the man named Yeshua, and they say, "Tell us how to pray." Now, you'll notice if you look at that particular passage, they didn't say to Yeshua, "Say a prayer for us." You know, if I were, let's say I were a music teacher, a voice coach, and you said to me, "Michael, teach me to sing," would I be teaching you to sing if I sang a song for you? No, I wouldn't be. I'd be singing a song for you. So when they say to Yeshua, look carefully at that passage, they don't say a prayer for us. They say, teach us how to pray. So maybe if we listen carefully, we'll, instead of hearing them ask Yeshua to say a set of words that 2,000 years later, just about every Sunday, people get together and babble together, maybe if you really look at that passage and some passages that precede it, you hear Yeshua talking about babbling words, and he says, don't do that. It's not about that. And until you get back to the original Aramaic word, and somebody, if you would, maybe you'd mute yourself. There's a little bit of noise there. But this word prayer in Aramaic, very much like what Jim was just talking about, is we have an antenna that radiates a signal, and in order for him to get online, he has to capture that signal. Prayer is about you and I capturing a signal in Aramaic. It's not about babbling a set of words and putting our order into the cosmic gift catalog. So the word prayer in Aramaic can be properly translated as to set a trap for God. Now, the trap that Jim had for this signal for the internet, again, could somebody mute themselves? I can hear you breathing. So capturing that signal is what it's all about, and removing interfering energies, which is what hostility and fear are, that prevent us from capturing the signal that we're designed to live in, and then becoming aligned to receive that signal becomes key in the whole process. And so in Aramaic, the word prayer means, quite literally, to set a trap for God. which sounds kind of strange until you start to think of it in terms of the fact that we live in an energy system and we are continuously capturing signals. If we go back to the ancient Aramaic, the word God translates as love. It is not the theological monstrosity that men have made up, but it is the fact that we live, move, and have our being in this awesome active space of love. That's where we're designed to live. So to pray means that I align myself so that, like Jim's computer, I capture the signal that's designed to connect me to the internet. I capture the signal of love that connects me to all of the love in the universe. If we listen to Einstein, one of the masters of understanding energy systems, we hear him saying, if you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. If you think you're separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical illusion. Your brain is showing you things that aren't true. And so when we become properly aligned, we bring a signal into ourselves that empowers us to express as love. And that's what the word prayer means. So when the disciples say to Yeshua, teach us how to be the space of love, Yeshua gives a set of instructions. Here's how you do it. He doesn't give them a set of words to repeat for hundreds and thousands of years, hoping that things will change. He gives them actual instructions for how to become aligned with love. And as we choose to align with love, as we choose to become the space where love shows up, the interfering signals, the branches from the tree, as Jim was just talking about, are the generational hostilities and fears. The hostilities and fears that we picked up from our environment and from our culture. There's an interesting statement in the Beatitudes that says that we will live in the neural structure we're designed to live in that guides us to happiness and well-being when we love truth enough to look into our errors in thought and the errors of our society. And when we do that, we'll be cured of mental stress. So we find a whole different set of instructions when we go to the Aramaic. And, of course, when the meanings are changed, you can't follow the instructions. So people say, you know, why can't I do what he did? Because you haven't heard his instructions yet. When you hear them in Aramaic, and basically that's what the core tool of forgiveness is all about. That's what all the tools we've developed are about, clarifying the Aramaic meanings of the words. We'll actually be coming out in the not-too-distant future with two new two-hour videos on Aramaicisms, where Dale Allen Hoffman and myself have spent two hours each evening in discussion about these Aramaic words and what their original and true meanings were and how to get back on track with that Aramaic mindset rather than what the Greeks have fed us, which is at best a cheap copy. And so that's what we're here to support and to empower each of us living as that space of love. You know, I can remember being a kid and being told, well, there'll come a time when your whole life will become a prayer. And I thought prayer was about being down on your knees. And so, you know, the only thing I could imagine out of that was square knees. Yeah, in a very real, practical level, in the secular world, where when you are in the middle of your biggest stress, you know, if you're Mr. Politician, and you're in the middle of the biggest crisis the country's ever seen, you want to be in prayer. You want to be the space of love connected to all of the love in the universe, which will then give you instructions for how to deal with whatever crisis you're in. It's the most practical teaching on the planet. But there are those who don't want individuals living in the practical teachings on the planet, because if you live in the practical teachings on the planet, the most practical teachings on the planet, you'll be in charge of your own life. And if you're in charge of your own life, the kings are not going to like you. They're not going to be accepting of that. They don't want you living your own life, tapped into what the universe is instructing you to do. They want you to tap into them as the source of your instructions. And so forgiving means removing the interfering energies, the branches that Jim was talking about, that you've bought into. Perhaps they came to you genetically. Perhaps they came to you through your environmental experience. But removing those things that interfere with the signal that keep you from functioning as love. And as you apply forgiveness, that's what you do, and you become more and more deeply connected to the active presence of love until 24/7, 365, you're literally living there. That's what we're here to learn. That's what we're here to support. And that's what we're here to empower you to do. And so, Jeannie, do we have anybody else with a hand up?
781.
Area code 781. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
This is Ron from Massachusetts.
Well, hey there, Ron from Massachusetts. How do you be, good sir?
I'd be wonderful. Thank you for asking.
And awesome. You? Good to hear you. I am awesome.
Awesome.
A little harried with getting Heartland operating and getting things handled going. It's a little bit crazy, but all in all, we've been having fun. We had a great class last night. The group is really sweet. We had the food's been awesome, so we're just kind of rocking along here.
That's tremendous. Well, as you know, I find, in my experience, responsibility communication is a life-saving tool, and I love it. And I love observing the cumulative effect of both using the tool and also of not using the not being in the cumulative effect of using projection communication. Because I can only
right.
I shudder at the thought of what my life would look like had I just continued to use projection communication over the years that I've been doing my work and trying to use and using responsibility communication. My question today, I was kind of pondering my own question as I listened to you, and it was really kind of a bad habit or an error that I've noticed in my approach to doing worksheets that I'm eager to hear your thoughts about, you know, and it has
okay.
to do with,
go for it.
It has to do with blame, and as I grew and as I learned that, okay, I'm going to do a worksheet to get out of blaming this person, place, thing, or event that's going on with me now, I noticed something sneaky. I'm just beginning to notice something sneaky that my mind has been doing. And the way I would describe it, it's if I think of blame as, like, let's say, blame is a certain energy dynamic, a certain pattern I run. And so kind of like a throwing motion. It doesn't matter if I'm throwing a tennis ball or a baseball or a golf ball or a football, the throwing motion is about the same. And my blaming motion is about the same. And what I've noticed that's kind of sneaky is that I've created a straw man called the past. And I've kind of gone into worksheets like, I'm going to go and find that past thing to blame. I'm going to go find that past event to then blame that, and I don't. It's a little subtle to me, but it seems that when I've been successful in worksheets, I've just done the instructions of the worksheet. I haven't gone in with as much predisposition. Sometimes it works even no matter what I do because the tool is so powerful. But I've noticed that, and I don't think I'm alone in this, that I can set up kind of a straw man called the past or the past event. And I think there's a difference in the energy flow where when it really works and a past event comes up, I'm allowing that past event to come up and then I'm perceiving it there. I'm not kind of doing a search to get it. I'm curious if you what your feedback might be to what I've just said. I'll go on mute and listen.
Just give me the question a little differently. Ron. I'm not sure I quite got it.
Do you think that some of us blame the past and get caught in that same blame dynamic, but with a past event, and have trouble, get in a habit of blaming the past in the same way? It's still projection if we're constantly saying, well, I'm this way because of this past event, or I'm that way because of this past event. I mean, that's still an abdication of my responsibility to some extent. So how do I clarify that in the present and be like, yes, this past event, and not get in the habit of doing a worksheet looking for some past event to blame?
Right. Well, my take would be, first of all, there's a great song that Paul Simon wrote, and the melody line of it goes like this. Slip sliding away. You know, the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. The nearer our destination, the closer we get to a core issue, the more the mind wants to find somebody or something else to blame. And certainly, you know, we can slip slide away when we're looking at something from the past and wanting to make it responsible for what we're experiencing and believing that the past is a present moment experience. Yeshua talked about that as the dead buried by the dead and the blind led by the blind. So let's just walk through a little scenario. If I were to define a word as a tool of communication, seeing as how we've been talking about responsibility communication, would that be a reasonable definition for a word?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. And if words are being used, it's reasonable to assume that there's an interaction between two, in this case, or two or more. In this case, you and I are using words, and so we have this interaction going on. So words, tools of communication, indicative of an interaction between two. Reasonable?
Yes.
Okay. So now notice that inside your head right now, there are words running. I just ask everybody who's listening to the show, notice the words running in your head, and you're not communicating with anybody else. If words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, who's in there with you? And my offering is that once something is stored in carbon-based memory, the fact that it's stored in memory means it's from the past. Interesting scenario in the movie Inside Out. What happens to Joy? She gets lost in long-term memory.
Yeah.
Most people are playing out data, information, and experiences from the past, and because they're experiencing them now, they think that they're actually experiencing the present, when in fact, what they're doing is re-experiencing the past over and over and over again. You know, many people say, well, you know, boy, I've had 25 years experience of that one, and what they really mean is I've had 1 year 25 times. It's just doing the same stuff. Yeshua talked about the dead buried by the dead, again, the blind led by the blind. If we are led by something stored in carbon-based memory from the past, and the realities generated from that, then it's even more imminent than blaming the past. It's believing that the projections from carbon-based memory have any meaning whatsoever in the present.
Oh, God, I love that. I love that response. Thank you.
And so one of the reasons for forgiveness is to collapse, to empty the 9-bit mind of the data stored in carbon-based memory from the past that keeps hallucinating and playing the same games over and over and over again, and actually making the space for a present moment experience. And the thing about the present moment experience, there's a reason they call the present, is because whenever you're there, there's a present, there's a gift. And the gift is the presence of love. If we're not experiencing the presence of love 24/7, 365, it's because we're stuck in the past. And we're calling the present, or pardon me, we're calling the past the present. And by doing so, we lose the gift. And when you recognize that the effort of our whole culture has been to entrap us in its thought systems from the past, the definition of life in our culture is having the best mind that can play out the data from the past the fastest to come up with the best answer to satisfy the king.
That's hilarious. That's exactly right.
Then we're successful. Then we make money. Then we get rewards. Then we get patted on the back. And, you know, on and on and on goes the game. And we're dead.
Oh,
we're dead.
Yes, yes. Yes, and yes, thank you.
So the idea of using forgiveness to collapse the output of the mind from the past so that you can have a present moment experience and live in that connected space of love 24/7, 365 is the whole goal of the work. And it is the active presence of love really, truly a personal experience of love, personally experienced, that leads to that. It isn't the debate over who can come up with the best answer from carbon-based memory, or even who can come up with the right answer. It's can you live as a human being? You know, you look at the newborn, and you've got that awesome presence of love. And the world gradually locks us into carbon-based memory and data from the past, and that steals our human lives. In our human lives, there's creativity, there's aliveness, there's everything we could possibly want. You know, if you look into the so-called education system, you see children who go into that system at 4 or 5 years of age that are creative and expressive and just living in human life, except for most when the stress is up and the chips are down, and then they give up the human life, but they're in that, and as soon as they're put into most educational systems, their creativity just collapses, because now this is about learning by rote information that will allow them to pass tests, be right, get jobs, and be run by the king. Forget human life. Get a good job. Go make money. And I would suspect, you know, from our conversations, the fact that you've done so much work and that you're raising your daughter to really truly live as a human being, that this would be a particularly interesting piece and level of understanding to get a hold of.
Very much so, and it's just a beautiful timing for me today, and a lot of my, I have been really flirting with just the physical pain of those core moments of letting go of my being, and more and more, you mentioned, you know, slip-sliding away as I get closer and closer to a core issue, and that is my intuition and my experience now, is that that's what I'm playing with, and it's less emotional to me than it is just physically painful at this particular moment. At least that's my. But this is awesome, and I love it, and I love your response.
Would probably be, if you've got the space right now, a perfect time to go and breathe.
Will do. I will.
All right. But we're down to the last few seconds. That was a fast hour. And questions and the insight, I appreciate your process and the work that you're doing. And everybody, we appreciate you joining us. And bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world and to give yourself. We'll hold you in the blessing. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.1 whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.